Okay, well, we have a special guest today. We have the return of the wonderful, intelligent INET, post-INET, Katie Thomas. Are you there, Katie?
I am. Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
And I'm doing well.
You're doing well, so am I. So what happened to you is you read a new book, and you were quite excited about it, and you wanted to talk about it, and also about Margaret Atwood, probably the most famous Canadian novelist of our period, her review of this book by Dave Eggers, who is famous for having coming on, I think came out of New York City, and he wrote a book in 2000, a heartbreaking work of staggering genius. And I think it was in the school of David Wallace. Is that his name? David Wallace? Is it like that or
well,
not encyclopedic?
Not as encyclopedic. He's
but
been influenced by Wallace. Yeah.
Yes.
He did read.
And
the big Wallace book is The Infinite Jest. It's 1,079 pages, and it's been called Joycean, and it has all these notes in it, too, but they're at the back of the book, so as you read, it's not like you can just look down in the footnote.
Yes.
You have to flip back and forth in the book, and the notes are critical, so you can't just, like, skip it like you could in, like, a Ken Wilber, like they're part of the plot.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's in the tradition of Thomas Pynchon, I guess. He's the Generation X Thomas Pynchon, who, you know, Pynchon was influenced by Joyce and McLuhan. I wonder if Eggers was influenced by McLuhan in any ways.
I don't think so. And no, I don't know. And I did Google to see if they were at all, if there was some written indication of his influence, and that's how I found Margaret's review of the book. But that was the only mention, and it was hers. And this novel is good. It was written in 2013, so it is two years old. But they're making a movie into it. They're making it into a movie.
It's called The Circle. I didn't say the title yet, The Circle. And Dave Eggers, it's Eggers. And he started a magazine called McSweeney's, which became literary expression for the Generation Xers. That was the status place to be reviewed in or to have articles in. So he established a literary hierarchy for his generation, and then it became a publishing house. And then he did a monthly called The Believer, which I just happened, when I was in California a month or two ago, I saw a collection of The Believer, writers interviewing writers, and another one on music. I didn't know what it was, but I bought the two books because it's my way of finding out what the younger kids are thinking or what they were thinking over the last 15 years. And then it turns out that's what he did. He was The Believer. He started that that journal. So let's – now, this novel is about today. It's about the digital life, the five-bodied world, and I don't know what the main character is. Oh, yeah. I read the review where it's a young woman who's drawn into the Silicon Valley world. So you take it over and tell us a bit about the novel. We're not holding back on what the novel's about. We're going to talk about it next
week. Yeah, there'll be all kinds of plot spoilers. So I'm not going to worry about plot spoilers. So if you plan on reading it, then don't listen. Although it's not that hard to figure out. And another thing, before we get into the plot, or giving a brief summary of it, another thing that's remarkable about this is not only, it's got the technology piece in there that Margaret brought up, and she brought up Marshall, but to finish my thought, the ways that this book is flawed, and it is, it's kind of clunky. I really, really enjoyed it, but it's not like a perfect novel. It's because you can tell he doesn't have the McLuhan piece.
Right.
He makes some good thoughts, but that's where it kind of falls apart. It's because he really doesn't understand that. And so it's in the not-so-distant future, and there's this company called The Circle, and they've purchased, like, Facebook has died, and they've purchased Facebook's archive. So it's like Google, Twitter, and Facebook all in one at this place called The Circle. So she gets a job there, and her friend gets her the job. Like, she's kind of a loser. She thought she was going to have this fabulous life, and now she's working, like, at a utility company in a desk job. And this friend of hers that has a lot of class and panache and went to all the right schools but is a friend from childhood gets her a job at the Circle. And it's the most prestigious place to work because all the cool ideas are happening there. And, you know, this is kind of a tangent, but a lot of the things that he's setting up, too, you set up when you used to talk a lot about, you know, paramedia ecology. This is, I think, pre-ION. There's those old YouTube talks with you. Maybe there's like 9 or 10 of them with that bald guy. What's his name?
Harold Channer.
Yeah, Harold Channer. It's interesting because I was harking back to those talks when I first started to listen to your stuff like 2 years ago. And a lot of the premises that he brings up, you're bringing up before Facebook was even as big as it got. Because those were like in 08, weren't they, that you did those talks?
They started in 2000.
With Harold?
2000.
Okay.
Harold Channer's 2000, a couple in 2000, then there's a break 2004, then 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, and there's a total of 10.
Okay. So they are, what you were saying then, a lot of the points that you were making, like the media ecological points about social media, were points that Eggers is making in his novel and kind of flawed. So that was interesting. It was interesting to think back to what I remember hearing you say in the past and how it compared to the novel. So we'll bring up some of those points. But anyway, May gets this job, May Holland, and part, it's like a dream campus. So she arrives and everything's there. There are stores and every service that you could ever want to have and spa services and vegan food and everybody's socially conscious and all the greatest things that you could think of in terms of new apps are being developed there. And she gets put into customer experience. And then she needs to go in and rate all of these products and help customers with their relationship with the Circle and how the Circle is helping them economically by promoting their products. So she's rating a lot of things. And as the story begins to develop and they're ramping her on up into this world, she each day somebody comes and places a new device in front of her. So she keeps getting more and more screens that she's got to check that monitor different things, different forums. She's supposed to join groups, go to social events, and everything has to be commented on. So one of the things that reminded me of, based on what you used to talk about, maybe you still talk about it now, but this whole idea of like digital currency, there was something that you talked about where it was like money used to be private and then it went public and then we had credits and then now money is digitized. So she's introduced to this new form of currency, which is all based not on doing anything but on reporting about it and collecting data on how many people like what you like and might be
influenced
to buy.
Yeah, you know what that is? That's currency, and then it's a pun on currency. What is current? And the word making the market and defining, and their role is to define what is current, that's currency.
Mm.
That's what you're describing, digital currency. What's current?
Okay. All right. And so as she's coming into this world, she's falling in love with it because she's getting all this digital currency. And it's cool when you work at the Circle to be in the inner circle and up in the hierarchy, part of this group of 40. There's a group of 40, so that's significant.
Yeah.
And then there are three wise men who started the company, and they're supposed to be like Jobs, Zuckerberg, and somebody else. You know, they wear a hoodie, and they do those stereotypes really well. And then it's also kind of Orwellian because they have some certain slogans throughout it. One is secrets are lies, so they think the Circle is operating under the premise that all things should be known. And I think you talked about that in one of your earlier talks, too, about how in the new Orwellian dystopia, I don't know if you say it exactly like that, but Big Brother isn't watching us anymore. We're all watching each other.
Yeah, daily espionage by ourselves. Yes, espionage is our daily activity, McLuhan said in 1970.
Okay. So, again, I don't think Eggers knows who McLuhan is, but he's setting that up, too, through this not-so-distant future seeming utopia at the beginning of the book. We all are wanting to be transparent. Like, everything should be reported on. All things should be known. Everybody has a right to know everything. And then the three wise men all have different reasons for why they wanted to start this sort of company. And one of the guys has a son who's, like, in a wheelchair or something. He's crippled somehow. I know that's really politically incorrect. I shouldn't say that. He's disabled. And so this wise man wants his son to be able to see the top of a mountain because somebody's showing it to him by doing a video of it.
Any mountain.
Like the point
is, he just wanted to give him the experience.
Everybody has a right to these experiences, right?
Right.
So if you can't, if you don't have the money, the means, the physical means, the time, whatever, to do these things in life, as a citizen and as part of the circle, it's your duty to share all this with everybody else so they can experience your experiences. Like, this is the philosophy that they're using to lure people into full participation. That's what they want, everybody reporting on everything all the time. And then as the novel progresses, they want this to be mandatory, and they want the government to go through this, and they want democracy to be run through the circle. And it seems like you were talking about something about that, too. Do you remember what you used to say about that in those talks? There was something about democracy and how it could affect voting or might affect voting or already does, or either that's obsolete.
Well, that becomes mob rule. People
that's
who
what
object
it is.
To that. Yeah, mob
yeah.
rule. And the mood of the moment the people get into, and then they digitally vote on it, and there's no representatives, no legislation, bureaucracy to slow it down. They just say, okay, yeah, we don't like Bob today. We're going to kill Bob. And everybody in the majority comes and says, yep, kill Bob. He fucked up. And that's no time for reflection is the perceived disservice by literate people, but post-literate people just want to participate. William Rimmer Thompson talks about this as the main characteristic of the electric age is, you know, mass discarnate participation. So that becomes political and, you know, scary for most literate people.
That's yeah, and the way that he developed that particular point in the novel, it didn't swing to mob rule, but what they did do as it progressed is, in all these things they were testing within the circle, but their goal was to get the government to require that everybody have an account. Oh, and you know, I should back up too. The name of the profile on your circle account is called your true self. So all of your other profiles are merged, and it's one name, one self, one password, and it all has to be authenticated. So another goal of this company is they want to do away with trolls on the internet. They want to do away with anonymity on the internet and then make a utopia, because if everybody's watching everything that you do and it's going to be reported on, then you wouldn't commit a crime.
Right.
And then all of the technologies are geared toward what seems like safety, but involve things like a chip in the bone of a child that will be able to locate it anywhere in the world that would reduce crimes against children by 99%. But then there are also other considerations about, like, putting all their test scores in there, everything that they've ever learned, every book they've ever read, and, like, their whole intelligence record in their chip. And so there was always kind of a bad thing that would go along with these new inventions, but something that was really appealing in the beginning to get people to buy in.
Yeah.
And then another thing that I thought was interesting is there was one monitoring device, because, again, she's getting all these new devices because she works at the circle, so every new little gadget that comes across, which you had talked about that too, gadgetry. You know, as we used to, when you talk, it was the anthropomorphic physical, how, like, finally we're bigger than our gadgets.
Right.
So we feel like we can bring about second nature again, but
yes.
There's that period of time where people are so gadget crazy.
Yep.
Right? Okay,
yep.
So they're in this gadget.
Now, she's in a position to be the most informed person in the cyber world, right? Because she is up on whatever's happening at the most informed
yeah.
campus and is looking. So she is the oracle, and she has to make decisions or just comment on it all?
She has to make decisions on it, and they're also required as employees of the circle to get a certain conversion rate for actually making people
Making people what? Did you get
She's also responsible to get people to buy stuff because she's mentioned it on her circle account.
Right.
You know, like, oh, like, you know how we were about the drops sometimes. Like, oh my gosh, I just got my drops. They're so great. You should order some. Here's the number. Like this sort of thing. But as a
yeah.
circle customer experience rep, one of her jobs is to make sure that people are buying stuff that she recommended.
Okay. Are there other people doing her job, or is she
yes,
the only one?
Yes, we're the new. No, there's other people doing her job, but she's excelling to the top of her department
yeah.
quickly. And then she starts an affair, and we don't know who it is. It's some man who lurks in the shadows. So she's having this, and of course she sleeps with him like right away. And then there's sex scenes in the book that are like Harlequin romance. Like, I can't believe Dave Eggers wrote them. Like, really corny, like bad.
Okay, all right.
But that's okay. And then she also has a boyfriend who doesn't want any part of this, and he's an artist. He makes chandeliers out of animals' antlers.
Yeah.
So he's trying to disappear and go off the grid. Her dad is sick and has a small stroke, and she gets them covered on the Circle health plan. And
yeah.
So she thinks she's doing really right by her family, but every time she goes around and sees them, she has to document or feels compelled to document on her Circle feed everything that she's doing with them, pictures,
yeah.
selfies, all this kind of stuff. So she's alienating her most important relationships as she's excelling in her career.
Right.
And then things develop, and you can tell it's really getting culty. So it seems like it's all fabulous at first. And I really bought in the beginning, too. I was like, this would be such a great place to work. Wouldn't this be fun? You'd have all this fabulous stuff. Everything would be taken care of, blah, blah, blah. And then they start to really get culty with her if she ever misses out on something. Like if she misses a notification, there's a social event, and she doesn't go, she gets made to feel really guilty for that. And they just keep giving her more and more questions to answer, surveys to answer, products to try and comment on, that she can't possibly get it all done. And when she doesn't, they start to make her feel guilty. And then there's this metaphor with this shark. It's a transparent shark, and it's just because it's the future. So you can see food going through it as it eats. And it was kind of a clunky, symbolic thing that Eggers threw in there, but that's okay. We see the shark 3 times throughout the book devour everything that's in a tank with it when it's in a tank. But when it's out in nature, it's just kind of existing out there, and may even use it one day when she's kayaking in the very beginning before she starts her job. So there's this kind of symbolism going on, too, that this is unnatural. And when you put somebody, you know, when you put the planet in a membrane,
right.
Like when, yeah, which wouldn't that be like the satellites, kind of? Or do you think
that's
more of an, I guess it's both.
And there's total transparency in the aquarium.
Yeah. Yeah.
The global fishbowl.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Surrounded by the artificial membrane comprised of the satellites after they went up.
Yeah, and fiber optics.
Right?
Yes, satellites
okay.
and fiber optics.
And then cameras are introduced as another app. So they have these cameras about the size of lollipops, and they're called Sea Change cameras. So they're maybe like $50 a piece, and you buy them if you want them just as a person, and you can put them anywhere, and then anyone who you give permission to be on your feed can see what's going on the cameras. So at a certain point, May's getting to a point in her career very quickly that it becomes a good move to go clear, is what they say. Sometimes they call it clear, which is kind of taking from L. Ron Hubbard, Dianetics. That's what the whoever they are do. What's that cult in California?
Scientology.
Yeah, that's what Scientologists do. They go clear. Then they also.
And what
does
she? What does she have to be clear about?
That means she'll agree to wear a camera everywhere she goes, and she can never turn it off. I think she gets like a 30-second time that she could turn it off if she goes into a bathroom stall. Otherwise, she's agreeing to have everything she ever does be documented for all the world to see and watch on the Circle. Which, again, is like this, like, you know, huge Facebook thing where everyone could look at it. So I thought it was interesting that he couldn't pin down a name for what he wanted to call this process when people allow themselves to be completely documented. A couple times he called it clear. Then it was called transparent many, many times. And then one time, Bob, somebody referred to it with May as an ascension.
Mm.
It was, it was used one time. And so I was like, wow, you know, if only he knew, you know, but he doesn't. So that's okay. He couldn't write about the drops or anything like that. But, I mean, he's kind of trying to do, you know, get as far as you got before Ion showed up. Not really. But
yes.
You know what I mean. Like, he's only taking it so far. He doesn't know the new environment, so he can only take this so far. But on some things, it's kind of close.
Okay, let me say this. So the chip body is now art form status because it's inside the new Ionic ground. So this is a novel about the services and disservices of the chip body. It's enough in the past that a guy could write a novel about it.
Well, and here's the thing, too. He didn't speak to this because he doesn't really call it a novel. It's a Manichaean satire. Like, it's even listed... He's trying to do Manichaean satire on purpose. So he's trying to make fun of or satirize a whole bunch of different memes during this particular thing.
Is
that
he satirizing
doing.
Her old boyfriend, who's the Luddite? Is he satirizing them? Is he satirizing her family as well as the management
mm-hmm.
there?
I think he's satirizing. There's like there's a voice for every.
Yeah.
Player that he could think of archetypally in this situation, I think.
Okay.
I mean, wouldn't
yes.
you think a literary person would do that on purpose? If their sisters are going to call him Manichaean satire. So, place where it starts to fall apart is as things escalate, these sea change cameras have been planted all over the place, and people are starting to... be able to look in on other people. At one point, she's wearing a camera, and she walks in, and she catches her parents having sex, and that gets broadcast, and that's like the last straw. Like, they just are like, you can't be our daughter anymore. And she asks the circle if they'll delete the video, and they don't delete. Like, you're not allowed to ever delete anything.
Wow.
So then, at that point, that doesn't even make her think. She's just on the point of no return now, and she's just going to go for this. So
you mean she doesn't feel sorry for them?
No, she thinks she's really brainwashed into thinking that keeping anything to yourself is really selfish. Like, you should be willing to share everything all the time.
Now, that's the archetype for the literate chemical body. You know, it's the old chemical body is worried about this new situation expressed by her parents and her old boyfriend. The archetype of the literate literacy gave people privacy.
Right. Well, they didn't have walls before this book.
Yeah. Would you say laws?
Walls. Without walls.
Walls.
That's why Marshall's everything is always without walls.
Yeah, without walls.
Yeah, I love that. So the thing is that's different in this futuristic thing is everybody's like watching and there's a lot more video. And instead of just like following, you know, we follow on Facebook. Everybody's watching, so the medium has cooled off because people are more participatory. They're asking for full participation and full transparency. So you see a change in the temperature of the media, which I also thought was interesting. And then there's this feature where if somebody doesn't want to be found, that you can appeal to the circle to find someone, and they will find the person. And it's supposed to be an answer to, like, you know, really taking a sex offender list, say, in a community where, you know, people deserve to know if criminals are living next door to them. It's supposed to alleviate that aspect of society and make it more utopian that you'd be able to find any criminal anytime. May is demonstrating this to a panel and asks for a name of a fugitive to be found, and there's just supposedly this woman like burned three of her kids alive in the house or something, like she was a horrible criminal. And so they find her, but it's not just like a Google search, like it's involving all of these people kind of in a, you know, that show where that guy whose kid got his head cut off and then he started that America's Most Wanted minute show.
No, I don't know. He had his head cut off in real life?
Yeah, there's this man, and he had a son, and the son was abducted and decapitated, and so he vowed to always help bring people who hurt children to justice, and he started this television program called America's Most Wanted, and they do a little biopic on the crime and the criminal and all that stuff, and then people will often find the person out in community and turn them in. So this is like that going on in a circle on steroids. And they instantly, like in about, I think she's given herself a 20-minute countdown, find this vicious criminal, this woman who's done this to her children, and bring her to justice. Then she decides she's going to find a second person, and who she's going to find is Mercer, her boyfriend, her former boyfriend, who's decided to not be involved. So they chase him, and then at one point where he's on some country road and there's no one with a sea change camera who's available to follow him, she has drones released. So this novel's jumping the shark a little bit at this point, if you ask me. But so she releases drones to chase after Mercer and find him, and it drives me crazy. So he drives his car off of a mountain and kills himself.
Right. And why is she doing this? Why is she driven to find him?
She thought he would be so. In the chase scene, she's asking the drone to pull up next to him so that she can speak in the little speaker box into the drone and say, "It's just me looking for you. I wanted to see you.
Right.
I'm trying to track you down because I care about you." She was convinced that he would be thrilled.
So
that happens.
So she's devastated by him dying.
No, she doesn't care. She thinks that he brought it upon himself. She's really turning into a straight-up villain. Like, her heart has turned to ice. At this point. Then she discovers that this person that she's having the sex with, sneaking off, like not even talking to each other, just like incredible chemistry sex. She discovers that he's not some random guy, but that he is actually the person who started the whole thing. He started the circle. And he says, like Marshall did about the television set, "You better turn it off, you know? It's going too fast. It doesn't matter what's being broadcast. The very fact that we have television and the light on, light through, and all that, you know, we got to turn this off," and nobody listened.
So he's telling the founder is telling her to turn off the digital chip body?
Yeah. Like, we got to slow this circle down and figure we can't, it was too dangerous to complete it. Okay, and
right.
So that's another theme. They wanted to complete the circle, which means have 100% participation and everybody living transparently. So they want to complete it, and like we have the completement formula. So here's this yearning for completement, but through the chip body, which will never, it won't, it, that's not where it happens.
Yeah.
You know? So interesting.
Yep.
And then her friend who got her the job, this is another subplot, her pet project, and they have this thing called, like, you know that show Shark Tank? We've seen that show where people go with their business ideas and pitch them to business experts, and if they like their ideas, they'll capitalize it. And they award, like, okay, so they have a thing like that at the circle where the best and brightest minds can bring their ideas, and if the circle likes it, they'll develop it, like, in 2 days, really quickly.
Okay.
And so that's really cool, too, because a lot of times these things stay in development for years, but the gadgets and the ideas, since the best of the best of the best work there, can happen very quickly. So the girl who got made the job, Annie, she wants to do hypedupancestry.com, where you can go back and learn everything about your ancestors. Where now we might be able to go back a little ways. Us who, like, I don't know who a lot of my family are because they came over from Russia and stuff. But that stuff is all like volunteer reporting and public records. But if everything was known, you can imagine everybody would be able to have a lot more complete genealogy report. So as she's doing her history, she finds out that her family are big-time slave owners, like owned Irish slaves, then came here, owned African-American slaves, traded slaves, like bad, especially in a really liberal, I mean, they were just terrible. So she has a nervous breakdown and goes into a coma. So in the final scenes, or the way the novel wraps up, the wise man goes to May and says, "You really need to slow this down." And she rats him out to the other two wise men so that he basically gets kicked out of the group and has no say anymore and drops him as a lover. And then her friend who got her the job is in a coma. And the final scene, she's sitting there so mad at her friend who's in a coma because now May doesn't know what she's thinking. Like, even when you're
so
in
that's, That's the Manipian satire. You're saying that the hero is looking at her sophisticated friend who's in a coma and mad at the friend for finding a privacy.
Right.
Through the coma.
Right.
Pretty good. So it's a satire of all of them, and everybody loses, and yet nobody understands a lot about what's going on.
No. And there was another thing that was really interesting, too, that was just something that, you know, again, it's similar but just misses it. We always say that, you know, you offer a product, a food, something somebody can ingest. Like, we can ingest the drops, and that's what allows us to relax and allow, and chromosome 14 and all that good stuff. That allows us to do the paramediological yoga or whatever. Didn't you say that before, where you're like, the new yoga is knowing how to juggle all this? Well, that's the drops. Yeah. So these people don't have the drops, and they all have a magnesium deficiency, and they're working at the circle, right?
Yeah.
So they when she goes, everyone has like a Fitbit. Have you seen these Fitbits that you wear on your wrist that track your basal metabolic rate and how much you slept, how many steps you took?
Wait, I missed that. What did you say, wristfit?
Fit.
Wristwatch?
F-I-T. No, it's not a wristwatch. It's a device that tells you what's going on in your body.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Your heart rate, how much you slept, the quality of your sleep. It's not that sophisticated, but it has some good measurements. And also how many calories you burned. And then if you want to input your food in the computer, it can't tell how many calories you burned, but if you put in, I ate an apple for 80 calories and I ate bread for 100 calories, it'll take it out of the total, and you look down on your wrist and see it. Well, in the circle, May has two bracelets, and they're beautiful. So you really love to wear them because they're like a beautiful piece of jewelry. And then there's a device that she swallows that's inside her body, a little camera or a little sensor that's sensing all of these things. So I thought it was interesting. We have the drops, something you can ingest. Well, she ingested a camera, but then she's taking literally a piece of the Android meme inside her, and then it's like a satellite inside, too.
Yes. So the what you got here is a description of the present, you know, last 10 years, and the chip body is not something, you know, radically futuristic. It's really about today. And, you know, there can be a cooperation behind the scenes between Facebook, Twitter, Google, Yahoo, and all these guys like those three. And it really is one campus. You know, that's what the there was a TV show called Silicon Valley, and it would begin with an opening trailer showing all the famous buildings in this industrial park in that Silicon Valley area. And if you ever go, check out that opening thing. So that's happening. He's describing the present. And sometimes it sounds like a projection of ionic utopia onto it. But that's a superficial understanding of ion. But it's interesting how he doesn't have a solution. He can only take the satirical stance. So that brings in Margaret Atwood's review, because she had an ongoing argument with McLuhan. And when I spoke to Margaret Atwood about 2007, 2008, after one of her book readings in New York, she said McLuhan was a misogynist, you know, was anti-woman. So here she is. I've never seen her mention McLuhan in a review. Maybe she has. I don't read her reviews too much. And then she mentions Manipian satire. I've never seen anybody categorize a popular novel as Manipian satire. So it's like she's got a bit of Bob knowledge there and applies it uniquely.
Yeah.
But she's not completely happy. Let me just say, she's not completely happy with the book. And but she says it's pretty good, but she knows something's missing. I think she ends by saying, let's see, a face with a direct gaze is said to be one of the first images a baby recognizes. It's a primary pattern. The human gaze, when languorous, is much celebrated in love poetry, but a blank or hostile stare is intimidating at the biological level. Who can look at whom and at what informs not only the parental admonition, don't stare, and the insulting childhood challenge, who are you looking at, but it informs a wide range of other human behaviors, from the use of mandatory body and head coverings to parental guidance labels on films to peeping Tom legislation. Kids used to be told, don't make a spectacle of yourself. But in the world of the circle, people must make spectacles of themselves. To refuse to do so is selfish, or as Bailey leads May. Is Bailey the inventor of this whole thing?
He's one of them.
Yeah, he leads May, the woman who's drawn into this, to declaim, privacy is theft. That's a famous, I forget the guy's name, a socialist anarchist guy. His name begins with P. In the 19th century, I think he said property is theft. So now privacy is theft. Then she, Margaret Atwood says, publication on social media is in part a performance, as is everything social in quotes, that human beings do. But what happens when that brightly lit arena expands so much that there is no green room in which the mascara can be removed, no cluttered, imperfect backstage where we can be ourselves in quotes? What happens to us if we must be on all the time? Then we're in the 24-hour glare of the supervised prison. To live entirely in public is a form of solitary confinement. Now, that's a good conclusion. It is it's the scream of the literary archetype. That's the Gutenberg memes grievance against the Marconi electric meme. But we're trying to find, so she says about the writer Eggers, but apart from the moments of almost farcical discovery, among them the discovery by the characters themselves that there's indeed such a thing as TMI or too much information, Eggers has a serious purpose, or several. One of them is to remind us that we can be led down the primrose path much more blindly by our good intentions than by our bad ones. In brackets, he's entitled to speak about good intentions, having manifested so many of them himself in his various other lives, meaning all the do-gooder stuff that Eggers has done. A second may be to examine the nature of looking and being looked at. So that's sort of like examining literacy and what the emphasis on the eye is. But where is it? It's a little earlier. Where does she say, where she criticizes his book and says it's at best just a mere entertainment? Maybe, can you find that part?
No, I don't have it. I'm so sorry. I don't have that printed out.
Oh, okay. So, let's see.
It was clunky. He wrote it in an experimental style, too. It wasn't chapters. It was like three long books. So that was weird.
What do you mean? It came out as three books?
No, it's like, book one, book two, book three within the same bound book, but no chapters.
Oh,
so
I see.
So in terms
of,
I think he was trying to do something experimental with language on purpose and make some of it tiresome to read because there's no punctuation or super long paragraphs. And that really did convey a feeling of like scrolling, checking. I mean, we've all been on internet binges before. It does leave you drained. So he did do a nice job simulating what it feels like to kind of be in front of screens doing that.
Yes.
Through the writing.
Right.
And I suspect that he's the one who called it the Menippean satire, because I've seen it listed as that a couple other places on the internet, so I don't think Margaret noticed that and said it. I think he did it on purpose, because he is a literary guy.
Right.
We don't have very many modern men of letters. We don't have any more real professors. We just don't. Not how it is anymore.
Okay, so Margaret Atwood, go ahead. He's supposed to...
No. I'm just rambling. Go ahead.
Did you say he's supposed? Did you start to say something like that?
No, I can't.
Okay.
Now I really forgot. Make your point.
Okay, so in her review, as a literary person, she retrieves all the previous books that have written similar themes about the problem of privacy, like Brave New World and other books in the 20s. And so as a literary person, she's going to say, well, nothing changes. This is the same modern update of the concern that's been going on for 150 years or something. And that's the literary blasé view that nothing's new. It's just done on the surface in a more up-to-date way about latest figures of technology. And so she's rather not impressed. It doesn't seem to prompt her to some existential investigation.
Well,
now,
the other thing is, let me just say this, that the final piece that makes the circle so powerful, in, like the search engine demonstrated where the boyfriend drove off the cliff and they found that female fugitive in 20 minutes who couldn't previously be found. When the circle asks all these people to go out and look for them, I didn't make that point clearly when I was talking about it earlier. All the people agree to, like, just get up from their house, their job, whatever, and go look for this person. So it's not like the computer's looking. People are helping it. And that really did not hold up well for me in the structure of this novel. I just don't believe that people would do that, especially with the degree of narcissism, solipsism, whatever you want to call it. You know, we can have our whole world in the palm of our hand, everything that we love, all our playlists, everything. I just don't think people would be torn away from that to go look for somebody else. And
well,
so,
Katie, it made me think about flash mobs where you can send out an email and ask people to show up somewhere. There is a participation that people are also yearning. So I can see that happening.
Okay.
But not everybody be doing it. Not everybody be doing it.
But some people would, probably more than I.
Right.
I hadn't thought about what Carolyn just said, probably more than that.
Right. And the thing is that Dave Eggers and Margaret Atwood are simplifying a very complex multi-body process, and that's all
right.
The book can do is get it down to a good, bad, happy, sad dialectic. And so it simplifies and does not describe the cornucopia of experience in all the bodies that people are having today. You know, many, many different kinds. You wouldn't even, how could you even frame it? The best frame is Finnegan's Wake, and that's, you know, sheer anarchy. So that's what's going on here. So it becomes boring. He does all this work to write a novel, but to me it doesn't provide any interesting breakthroughs. And that's what Margaret Atwood is saying. At best,
there weren't any. Well, and especially after talking to you, there weren't any breakthroughs. But I did like it. I found it entertaining. I do think, as a piece of literature, it does go with 1984 and Brave New World. You know, those were kind of funky. Go ahead.
All right, Katie, I'm wondering, you said it was already up for a movie. I just see so many of these teenage apocalyptic movies now, and I wonder if you wrote it with that in mind. You know, this would make a great movie. Oh, this is a great scene. Oh, the drone's going to get them over the cliff. So, to me, it takes away from any literary impact. He just wants to expand into a movie role.
Crossover, yeah.
Carolyn,
that's really observant. Some of the commentary was it was written just like a movie, just like you said. And they're going to get either Emma Watson. I've heard Emma Watson to play May, and I've also heard J-Law, Jennifer Lawrence, and then Tom Hanks to play one of the circle founders. So that's
okay.
I bet it will go really over. Go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I bet it will go really over the top, too. Like, I was so excited to see Lucy, and it was ridiculous. It was all just special effects.
Right. So this is going to be, it's time to satirize the Facebook phenomenon that everybody's familiar with. So he had a good timing. Maybe even Hollywood asked him to write the novel. You know, so he's laid out the screenplay, and they'll make a nice movie, and it'll be boring. Now, Ian's here. Do you have a comment on this novel, or the purpose of Eggers, Ian, about this topic, or you're not interested and would rather remain quiet?
Let's go with Judy and go fix a martini.
Who's Judy? Julie? You mean Julie, the INS.
Julie. We said Julie.
Yeah, did she mention that? She's going to go fix a... let's see. Yes, she says she's going to go fix a martini on... look at it. Bob and Ion seem to have disappeared, says Randy. What the hell is that talking about? What are they doing there over there? Julie says, I'm sitting here with no shirt on, waiting. Well, you should all, you guys all wonder where Katie is, and Katie comes back. So there should be great respect and tolerance and putting up with what she wants to talk about. All right? Okay, everybody? Let's appreciate the contribution here. Now, Ion, you get away with everything, being kind of a Zeus character.
We tear it up on the weekends, Bob.
Yeah, in other words, you're not interested in literary reflection.
Define reflection.
And not the way you would define it. Thinking.
Most assuredly, yes.
Yeah, you would not be interested in that. So when you, Katie, as you read this, what did you think about us? Did it help you see us as a new environment by this graphic description of the chip landscape and the chip body?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. That's what delighted you about it.
Yeah, Katie was saying she could see that he didn't have the McLuhan angle, and I really appreciate it. I haven't read the book. I probably won't see the movie now. So I think it's great that you give us an overview of the book, and then we just attack it.
Did you say,
like the shark?
Did you say you read the book, Cal?
I have not. I read everything, but I haven't read that book.
Right. Well, it's new. Oh, no, it's 2 years old, right?
Two years old.
So,
but do you find that, I mean, is that annoying for you to now have to look at things through Ion and McLuhan and Bob eyes? Is that annoying, or is that kind of exciting for you to see that there are other levels of interpretation of the world?
Oh, wait, you're saying, could you say it simpler? You're saying, does she appreciate, you're asking if she appreciates what we bring to it, or if she appreciates Dave Eggers' view. Is that what you're asking?
Is it frustrating?
For me? No.
Is what frustrating?
Is it frustrating to see that nobody gets it?
Gets us?
It gets us.
Okay. Is that frustrating, off. Katie?
No, it used to be frustrating. I used to be really frustrating, and I used to be really pompous and want to just, like, go around and correct people. But now I can delight in it, and I feel like it's probably, Carolyn, how you are with your medical practice, that if someone feels like they want to take box flower essences or tap or something, like they don't need to, but if they feel like sometimes you need a bridge, that's kind of more how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it does serve a purpose, and I mean, to me, just from a literary standpoint, to see somebody try to do a Manipian satire and write a tip, I mean, the story does have, for all its problems, it does have all of this kind of the steps that a story needs. To me, it was kind of neat to see somebody give it a try.
Right, part of this is Dave Eggers is a very important person for his generation. He's the ultimate success story. He started his own unique, eccentric journal, and now he's got to this point, and he's an authority and all this stuff. So he is someone of his generation attempting to deal with this without Bob knowledge.
Yeah. So I found it inspiring. I found it especially inspiring for my own writing. Like, I wanted to, you know, maybe do the Hollywood thing and write a TV show, that I found that really frustrating. I find approaching my own work more like this to be exciting.
Right.
Because I do have the other piece. So how fun to try to fit that into the structure of a plot subtly. I think
it's
fun.
Right. So people say, let's see, Julie comes back. Well, Trina says, this is awesome, but before that, Julie comes back. She may have heard what I said. She says, I love Katie so much. I thought this was pre-recorded. There's some kind of announcement on the site, and everybody's thinking this is all pre-recorded. But Julie likes it. Trina likes it. Julie says, I'm so happy Katie is here. And then Madeline says, it does say it's pre-recorded on the site. Bit confusing. Hi, guys. Trina says, I was just thinking about Kate today, or Katie. I think your case.
This is recorded, Bob. What are you talking about?
No, pre-recorded. It's pre-recorded.
It was pre-recorded before it recorded. Exactly right. This is right.
So Bill's catching up with you.
Bill's catching up. He's afraid that he's nervous about the turbo bridge. It's holding on for all it's worth, Bob.
So that's right. We stand corrected. It is, from Ion's perspective, pre-recorded. But Trina says, it says pre-recorded above. I was just thinking about Katie today, and here she is. Now, do we call you Katie, or is
you
the
call
young
me
woman
Katie
up in
and
Toronto?
You call me Katie, yeah. And you call the young woman in Toronto Kate. Although
yeah, the one in Vancouver.
You call her Katie. I don't know if she doesn't like it, but I thought she wanted to be Kat or Kate.
Right. Okay, because I may have started calling her Katie. So everybody's having a good time. But Kevin Kansas says, like tits on a boar. I think he spelled B-O-R-E, so it would be B-O-A-R. I don't know what he's saying.
Unless he's double entendre because he's bored.
Yes, he could be. Ion, what is going on at the Facebook campuses? Is this book accurate about the anxiety that employees have in their ideal job of being in this elite activity? Do you have a comment on that?
No, but we have now Stephen Hawking's voice software is now available for free.
His voice as software?
Yeah. Intel is making a program that gave Stephen Hawking his computer-aided joist free to the public.
Okay. And that's more signs that the chip body is well entrenched.
It's Assistive Context Aware Toolkit, ACAT.
But what do you make of...
So you're welcome.
So are you creating an alternative to this Facebook perfect job environment with your cloud?
Yes. Now we don't want to talk about this at all because this ridiculous, inappropriate, Manipian-driven, phatic, satiristic reality is going to bring people closer to the world that you're coming into. This is what we run is our cloud. So it's a bit tete-a-tete, so we have to stay sideways because Dr. Dean's making things, so we can't be too messed up about messed up things, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we understand
that. So it has
to
be easy on the and that's right. And you have to call Axl Rose for the rest. You have to call Axl Rose for the rest of it.
Oh, Guns N' Roses, yeah, Axl Rose. So I was just thinking that Ion is the last privacy. Ion can remain private because it's not here. So and, of course, he encourages our privacy, me and Carolyn. So we actually have a lockdown on privacy and to a great deal because you could maybe find out what we're making, but you can't understand it. You can't duplicate it because you can't see the eye cell. So that's what Ion is a great privacy come back as a original environment, and now it's here as an antidote to the transparent global fishbowl. Very interesting, isn't it? And yet Ion is available here to communicate some levels of information, not all of it, like he just said. He's not going to go into the cloud. I think it's a pretty good art that Ion, as people get more and more acquainted with Ion and realize, well, we're not going to find out the good stuff, that Ion still seems to attract attention. People still are interested, even though they might say, well, I would really like to know what's really going on over there at Dobbstown, but I'm not going to find out now. So Ion's pretty good at entertaining in those limitations.
Well, Ion's waiting for people to ask the questions to make their own breakthroughs.
Right.
We've said that right from the beginning. Why did the breakthroughs have to be all ours, even though we've copywritten all the sessions that people have had with Ion, so we own everything anyway.
And people, when they signed the
agreement.
The agreement to have a private session, it says on it that we have the right to do anything with the recordings. We could play your personal recordings to the world, and you have signed it away. We generally respected that and didn't do that, but it's actually people were so keen on interacting with Ion, they threw away all their rights, or what, traditionally.
They threw away their privacy?
And most,
threw away their privacy.
And they threw away all their rights and most of their lefts, Bob.
Yeah, it's hard to hit Ion. Can't see him. Can't touch him. Okay, so Kevin says boar. He meant B-O-A-R, tits, like tits on a boar. I've just been reading the Oxen of the Sun episode of Ulysses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you ever read Ulysses, Katie?
No.
Okay, here's what they offer. You know, for years, nobody knew if they were reading it correctly because it was a mixture of description of the outer world and then inner emotions, what they call stream of consciousness, and you couldn't tell who was saying what. It was hugely confusing. And I remember the famous Student McLuhan and American critic Hugh Kenner felt very powerful when he figured out how to read it. He read it for like 30 years and then figured out he could do it. Well, all the scholarship now knows how to read it. So you can hear a recording and listen. As you read it, you can listen along and hear the inner thoughts and the outer thoughts. You get an accurate perception of what it is. And that's quite a new experience that most people don't have, but the Chip Party now makes it available. So if you want to read Ulysses, as they read it for you through the parts, it really speeds up one's understanding. So I've been going through it and got to, there's 18 episodes, and I just did Oxen of the Sun, which were the cattle that Helios, the sun god, provided on his island. But Ulysses' men got so starving, they killed the cattle, the oxen of the sun, the boars with tits, and subsequently were all murdered. And Ulysses left on his own for his final engagements with Calypso and a few other people. So that's what it reminds me of, the boar theme. I have the image of tits on a boar because I've been wallowing in the Oxen of the Sun section for a few days. Oxen of the Sun. Oh, which comes up to a point, Ion. What was indicated by the Greek myths? I think you've said before, the Zeus and the gods were sent to people, but is there another aspect about what was the unknown part and message in the mythology, the famous Greek myths, Ion? Do you have a comment on that?
Not particularly.
Hey, Kel, would you ask the question? Maybe we'll do better.
Ion, were the Greek myths yet another attempt to decipher what John of Patmos was saying in Revelation
14. It's not a decipher. It's laying the pattern. It's laying the stage. They had to build roads. Those Romans built roads. They weren't going anywhere. They didn't have any cars to drive on. They didn't have any buggies. They hadn't even really invented the wheel yet. But yet they had the fortuitous insight to build roads to places. Okay? So this is what you're saying. They were building roads before there were superhighways. So if you mean it like that, okay. But the better question would be, why the hell were they wanting to build roads when they didn't have anything to go by anyway? They didn't have anywhere to go. Rome was all there was. There wasn't anything else happening. The Syro-Phoenicians were about to take over. And there was a
Eric Havelock, Harold Innes, and Marshall will explain that. Visual space, due to the enhancement of the phonetic alphabet, and exaggerate the eye as a new novelty, the space of isolating the eye and looking to the horizon, was the hidden perceptual ground that motivated the culture to make roads because they were suffering the effects
Which is why the boar's milk comes in.
How's that?
A boar starts, the memories of a boar start collecting milk, and the milk comes in.
And that's got something to do with the Romans wanting to build roads?
No, it has something to do with whatever the babble you were talking about. It was tits on a boar, and when the boar's milk comes in, now that's something to talk about.
You mean the effect of the phonetic alphabet made the boar
milk,
have tits?
Make boar's milk come in.
Ah, so the alphabet causes changes in nature. In animals. Carolyn is looking quite doubtful of that. She's going into this deep zone.
They do.
And quite skeptical.
That's why they all have those same. Get you some blessed thistle, some busted thistle. It'll make that milk come right on in.
Hmm.
Okay. But you started to say something about, it's interesting how Karen got you to say something about the mythology. Is there
She drives this train, Bob.
Okay, good. Glad someone's here does it. I mean, I don't mind if I don't have to drive train long, someone gets some information from you.
Then it's all good.
What?
If you don't mind, it's all good.
Yeah, it's always good.
It's even better.
Yeah, I do that too. I'm your boy, man. I make everybody get along. You know, I keep it harmonious.
What do you think, Carolyn? She would make him the poster child.
What's that, Carolyn?
Should we make you the poster child?
I am, for all intents and purposes.
Ta-da!
He is until he blows his image, and then he isn't, and then he
is. But that's
is
part of the
game.
Charisma.
Exactly.
Right? But is the chromosome 14 discussed in Greek mythology in any of the characters or stories,
yes.
Zion?
Yes. All the Zeus lane ones.
You mean where Zeus is having adultery with all these people? Of course.
And every other reference that you have that brings you back to this layers of godship, back to God. Then they fall, and Hercules, he fell and separated himself. He was the step, illegitimate, God-blessed, nymphomaniac, relaxed position of an egg that fell that got squirted with Jesus goo and made into something else, and Lord's suffering cats. But you see where that kind of goes. But it's just another imperfect imperfection.
Right. So we've got Zeus, who was the god of the sky and ruler of the Olympian gods. He overthrew his father, Cronus. So that could be Zeus realizing his power and overthrowing some sort of external god, his father, drew lots. He then drew lots with his brothers Poseidon and Hades in order to decide who would succeed their father on the throne. So they screwed up there because then they wanted authority. So, yeah, you could put the revelation and the Ionic wisdom through all the myths. But you're saying...
Yay!
Well, the writers of these Greek myths looked at the Emerald Tablets, for example, because they came before Revelation.
They can.
Because it's still happening. So they could have taken them.
That's why it's so funny, because it's being developed now. Then you'll find something even older than that. It was older than this. It came before that. That you put in the future from the past to catch up to now. Then you'll use that to gauge that same thing over. Had it all figured out.
Right. So the crumbs, everybody was looking for crumbs. Everybody was trying to figure out what the next step was. And even in this circle book, they keep just circling the wagons, and they never seem to flip out of the same old story.
That's how Bob made it. He was so busy doing his ridiculous, inappropriate, in every way chart that he was so busy sitting on the levee waiting on the Robert E. Lee that it all became. He got so far ahead of himself that he could catch it on the back flop. And it actually landed it right.
Well, yeah, with his 10 holy offices, he said, okay, this should show it up. I've got all these 10 things, you know, people are amazed when I tell them. Yeah, he's an expert in 10 different realms. And, yeah, he would think, okay, I've got it, but he didn't feel that he'd gotten it. He talked to the Evergreens, asked them. They gave him some more information, and finally he got talking to Ion to get to the 11th realm.
The 11th?
Yeah. The 10 holy offices.
Ion's the 11th thunder of Phineas Wake.
Okay.
The fourth ring, the part that's not known. Even Joyce didn't know it had the fourth ring in his Phineas Wake novel. So, Katie, is there a thought about this Eggers and Margaret Atwood that relates to what we're talking about? I'll say this. McLuhan said that the Greek characters, the gods, were actually references to technologies. It was not understood later, but when when a new when a god created a new situation, it was because a new technology was made. So the interplay between Zeus and his colleagues or people he engages, that is technological combination illustrated by the arms and crosses, the arms and circles of the chromosome 14. Right, Ion? This is a technological, chemical description. So each god.
No, you mean the ugly truth about Milton Friedman, don't you?
Yeah, that's by LaRouche about 1980. That was a good book. The ugly truth, yeah, it would be the technological interplay would be like generations. Each new god, each new liaison that Zeus does is a new generation of eicel substances. What do you think of that, Ion? Is that acceptable?
It's on the edge. It's on that leading edge, Bob.
So, oh, sorry, Kate, I cut you off. So what ideas? Here's David Eggers trying to describe the new technology, the new situation, from a literate perspective. Are you still there, Katie? Let's see. Maybe she got dropped off. She got dropped off. Yeah, okay, you're unmuted, Katie. So what ideas do you
have? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, I don't think he certainly did not see technology as God, for sure. He did not know that. I do think that he tried to pick archetypal characters. I mean, I do think he tried to tell the story in a classic way.
Right.
And Margaret Atwood is
picking up those echoes.
Yeah, and she talks about the naming of the characters. And certainly, I don't know if people do that all the time. Ty, the guy that May has the affair with, T-Y, True You, that's the name of the profile that you have in the circle is the True You. And then they have actually a subset of that that's called True Youth. What youth?
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's the new American fascism.
No, that's a book exposing LaRouche, written by Dennis King, that came out 10 years after the Milton Friedman book. So Ion's in the LaRouche quadrant right now for some reason.
Oh, no, we're so sorry. We don't
and
so
look
much
about
more.
Look at this about Zeus, Ion. His weapon was a thunderbolt, which he hurled at those who displeased or defied him. So he was actually
an angel.
Ruler of the skies and the natural phenomenon.
Being God is way gooder than hail.
Yeah.
So what did I say we were talking about? I've put down Ion Compson. Comment. What did we just talk about?
You were asking Katie if Buddy got any of the ion analogies.
Yeah. No, just the technologies.
Technologies, right.
Say this, Katie, it makes it sound like it is just a movie script. All this effort to writing this, don't know how many years it took him, it becomes rather superficial.
No, not if you consider he'll be a multimillionaire from selling the screenplay and getting a percentage of the royalties.
Well, you don't wish that on anybody, do you?
That's what everybody's after.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's a fine line between being like famous. He's almost famous. I think he'd probably like to be. I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because one thing too that is really emphasized is that the reason why everybody's so complacent in questioning whether the circle should complete itself and have everybody participate and be transparent is because it really plays on, you know, this currency of being liked, of being approved of, and for not even doing anything. Like, May has a couple dates with this one guy, and he prematurely ejaculates every time they have a sexual encounter because he gets so excited that before she touches him. And then this is all being filmed on their little cameras and posted. And after their episodes of, I mean, it's not coitus, but whatever it is, he always asks her to rate him. And if he gives her, if she gives him a rating lower than 100, he sulks. So she always tells them you got 100, you were perfect. But they never have sex.
What did you say? They never have sex. They never get to the joining. They
no,
have his ejaculations.
No. Right. Yes. He just ejaculates. So it's really this whole thing of human need, desire, and this feeling of not really having the experience, but looking at a screen in your hand about the experience and then documenting it. Like, I think that he really got right.
No, Katie, but think of this. I don't know if you were on What Youth the last time. Bob was going over the
he wasn't on it.
The new app, the dating app, where it's
yeah,
in New York.
Yeah, I saw the article, Tinder. The
Tinder yeah. So, I mean, that is people hooking up constantly. What the writer of Circle seems to be in a rearview mirror looking at how kids don't connect. They're all on their individual computers at home, isolated, but that's not true at all. So,
no, she's very, they're all knowing each other. They have transparency. They have transparency.
No, but the future ejaculation implies that he's never been close to a girl before, so he's just used to whacking off. So as soon as he thinks of the experience, he can ejaculate.
So what's your point there?
The point is that is not the Tinder reality where people are hooking up and supposedly not just ejaculating on one another.
Okay. Maybe Ian
right.
Is that true, Ian? Are people not ejaculating on each other? You get to see it all. How are
they should. They should. We wish they'd do more.
So,
and what I was really getting at too was this desire for approval. There's another thing too where, after the it's been a rule that everyone in the circle now has to have a bracelet, and they're going to vote. They're going to test this new program called Democracy, which is a play on democracy. Now I'm thinking of Roxy. But anyway,
right.
So you can't move. They're going to ask certain questions every day to Circle. It's information that they want to gather from you, and all your other streaming feeds are frozen until you answer these questions. And this is how they're going to test this to sell it to the government. So there's a quiz of different questions. And one of the questions is, do you think that May is awesome, yes or no? And she gets a 97% yes rate and is completely obsessed. Practically goes crazy because she has to determine exactly who this 3% who didn't say she was awesome is and find them in the circle and change their mind. About the way they feel about her.
She has to do that personally?
Yeah, she freaks out.
Right. Now, hey, Ian, is this, are the young 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds today different from the baby boomers and Generation X? Are they more concerned with peer group approval than any other generations, or it's always been the case?
No, it's always been the case.
So it's just an elaborate.
But the difference is now they have holidays.
Right. They can engage not physically and have their neurosis of being liked in the virtual arena. That's what you mean by holodeck?
Yes.
What is a way that a young person, as they grow, get older, what would shock them out of this peer group alliance or pressure or wanting the like phenomena, what kind of experiences would wake them up or shock them out of it? Do you have any inventory?
Why would you want to?
Yeah, well, I don't know if there's a reason to want to, but what are they vulnerable to get out of their morphine?
Yellow cake.
Yeah, that was that stuff that Bush used to do the Iraq War, that story out of Nigeria, mm-hmm. That yellow, that stuff.
So, uranium bomb.
Right. So Ian's saying a war would, a massive destruction would wake them up. Yellow cake.
Yeah, reintroduce conscription.
No, they'd just be killed. Now, they would have no guff to go to Ion. So people who are dying today, yay! People who are dying today, are they shocked that they don't get to the bliss zone of the guff? Eh? No?
Gotta try it another way.
Oh, try it another way. Try it another way, Katie.
I don't remember what you said.
Say it again. Ion doesn't know.
I don't remember what you asked. Were you asking if there's nothing beyond the... I don't know. I can't even take it. I don't know.
You don't know what... Okay, Carolyn, you ask it another way about the Generation Y and their death, and no guff for them.
But, Bob, how can you even ask about the guff? There is no guff.
That's what I'm saying. What's it like to die now, and your essence knows there used to be a wonderful bliss zone you'd go to, and they die, like all suicide is motivated for that bliss, and they find it's not there. What do they make of that? Ask about that, this new condition.
So, Ion, are the people that die now just completely mind-blotted so they don't even know what's going on? Ask it a different way.
Is Ion still here? Let's check. One thing is I'm sitting in a different part of the house now, and so Carolyn gets to look at my face. She always had to look at my back where my desk was, so... Now being observed quite rigorously, a lot more in my reaction. So I'm prompted to make many facial expressions while waiting for dramatic non-responses from Ion. Let's see, is Ion even here? Looks like Ion went away. Yes, Ion dropped off for a short while. So that means I will open all the other avenues of commentary, and people can ask Katie about what's up. And I'll just, before we start, Corbin, I'm sorry I couldn't play your music. I was only going to play this Zappa thing, this marvelous Zappa, for a short 30 minutes and then have Kate come in because we have to get things done before Ion shows up. So Corbin will be playing your music next week. And I don't know... Morbid Angel, I got the song called Altars of Madness, though it has another title. I don't know if it's the one you
want. Blaspheming the Ghost.
Right, not ghouls. There's one of the word ghouls in it. Not that one.
No, it's Blaspheming the Ghost.
Okay.
The album title is Altars of Madness. And since then, they have about 30, 40 selections, the same with Clutch. And the Clutch is about an earthworm, and earthworms are extremely important to the maintenance of insect life in all forms. And
right.
They're quite interesting. Theodore, what brought the idea up, Theodore Bacall, I believe he passed on the 11th of this month, and I did not know this. I knew he was in 200 motels, been an established actor, and in many different movies, plays, and whatnot. But he actually played, what's the character's, the lead name in Fiddler on the Roof? The guy has a name. It's if somebody's got to know the name, it's in the movie. But anyway,
Theodore Bacall plays the character. We're trying to find the name of the character in Fiddler on the Roof.
You know, he plays it on a Broadway play. I'm saying the actual guy that played the guy in the movie is still alive in Tel Aviv today. You know, it was real interesting. Heard it back-to-back. That's a piece of art. Now, how would a kid, say you had children that were of that age, or I would imagine between maybe 7 to 10, maybe 11 years old, and 10-year-old or the 11-year-old say, oh, this isn't cool or whatever, and the family goes to see it and everybody forces it, it wouldn't be a popular thing today. You know, they'd be like, oh, you know, they need to be more visually, audibly, and just and more even on a unconscious, subconscious, and blatantly.
What are you talking about? I don't have any idea what the subject.
Why wouldn't make it today?
Why not? Why wouldn't it make it today, Corbin?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know what you've said so far. I didn't even know that was the topic. What are you trying to say about the play? It won't make it today. What's your point?
Fiddler on the Roof. Did we not start talking about this from the beginning?
I know you're talking about that, but why wouldn't it make it?
Listen, now you let me carry out some of these beasts, and you'll be beating me down without sore from back in the gore that was stuck in the stone when you were left all alone. If I were a rich man, all day long I'd be man.
Awesome. Very nice performance there, Corbin. Now what was it called? Blasphemy of Ghosts? Does anybody remember the name of the Morbid Angel song? Did you remember that, Katie? Blasphemy
no.
of Ghosts? So I've got to unmute him. I'm making a note of Blasphemy of Ghosts, Corbin?
Blaspheming. Blasphemer. Like the blaspheming. The word to...
Blasphemer of Ghosts. Got it. Okay, good. So... So, Kate, you can, Greg or Wendy or Beverly or Allison, would you kindly create some fucking shit here and engage Katie? She took the time to come here. She didn't have to come here. And interact with what she offered you. Okay? You're all unmuted. Stop being idiots and participate. Make up shit about it.
Hi, Katie. It's Wendy. Unfortunately, we had company and dinner ordered, so I missed the majority of what you were talking
about. Okay, we have nothing to say, Wendy. Come on, all Greg, right. Ginny, Beverly, who else is here? Leon, Allison, speak. Sean in England. I know that Roxy would have something to say, but let's just give other people something to say first. What are you guys, all on mute, not really listening? You phoned in and then forgot you were listening and fell asleep? Don't make me mad so early in the show, please, you idiots. Okay, Roxy, would you like to engage some of the issues that Kate's brought up? Maybe Roxy got knocked off. Or she's unmuting. Where are you, Roxy? I had to call Roxy and bring her in on the phone because she has no computer for a week or two as it gets upgraded. So she was on the line, but not there now. So, Kate, you can do a monologue with my and Carolyn's participation until Ion comes back. So go ahead, Katie.
Someone can bring up another topic. You can say,
No.
Okay.
You, there are issues
okay,
here.
Well, what issues?
Margaret Atwood's response.
Okay, well, another thing that I was thinking of when I was just sitting here is there's no, in the Eggers novel, there's no angels or anything. There's no non-physical. You know, there's
right.
Chip, but there's no mystery, there's no angels, and I think that's significant.
No psychic ESP, none of the astral body archive.
None of it.
Yeah, that's one of the defining characteristics of the POB, the print-oriented bastards. You know, they're lost in abstraction. and do not find any value in ESP, and generally never believed it for 200 years, and science had the dominant perspective of, oh, no, that's not real, blah, blah, blah. So I don't, yeah, you know.
Yeah, when you said that, Katie, that's really interesting. It makes me think that maybe these people think that the computer is taking over that aspect, that body. The astral body is now the computer body, but then they want to control it. So
okay, I originally said the digital is an extension of the astral. The TV is an extension of the chemical body. And then the digital is extension, because you can go wherever you want in the digital world, like you can if you can astral travel. So now what are you saying with that definition?
Yeah, they're, the writer doesn't think it's important to bring in the spiritual, because consciously or unconsciously he thinks that it's covered by the cloud, the computer, the digital.
The transparency. Mm-hmm. It might be... The literate person might think that's a spiritual condition arrived at. Yeah, and McLuhan talks about that's the rearview mirror of the literate person. They really don't have an accurate perception of the digital, discarnate, electrified space, and they project visually biased Gnosticism on it. And so they're not perceptually qualified to uses of it. A different kind of deed services rather than worrying about privacy. I mean, that's a big deal in this book, privacy. We're going to lose our privacy. Don't many people or young people are concerned about that anymore.
No. And there was a sense, as she was getting all of her additional equipment and apps and things, like people would just walk in with the terms of agreement, and she would just sign, you know, without even looking. And we do tend to do that. I mean, you just kind of, you want the app, you want to interact on Pinterest or wherever you are, you're online, and you want to look at whatever thing is being offered, and I just scroll through the terms and conditions and click. In fact, when the doctor gave May the little device that she had to swallow for her health plan that sensed everything that was going on the inside of her body, she handed her a green smoothie and said, here you go, and it was delicious, so she drank it down, and then the doctor told her that the little device was in there. And she said, the doctor said, it's easier if I don't tell you that it's in there, because if it is, you'll resist swallowing it, and because you think you're going to choke, you know. So she kind of slipped it in there. But
and your point there about that anecdote, what's your point?
That we just so readily accept terms and conditions of in our online life without ever bothering to read them.
So
to the point where you would maybe swallow something not even knowing that you had signed up to have a camera in your body.
Yeah, Carolyn, someone told me they got an email from an old friend or someone who claimed that they were an acquaintance, and they sent a picture of their penis. Okay? So then I read somewhere this week that is the normal way of dating now, or of connecting in the chip body. It is not unusual to send your pictures of your naked self, some part of your body. And then there were different theories. Okay, people don't have time to find out what you got, so it's understood that you present your wares immediately. that's not privacy-oriented, right?
Mm-mm.
So what I see, what Dave Eggers did as a member of his generation was retrieve the after image of literacy. And I say that the old medium, books, movies, music, operas, they cannot be an anti-environment to this amazing digital utopia we're in. So it ends up, I say, the author didn't write the book. The book made its points be retrieved. So all the book brought in was privacy. So it's going to make a big deal about privacy. So Eggers channeled the meme of literacy. And that's, so this is literacy's response. Gutenberg means response to the Android meme. There's hardly any people in there. Eggers had to type it. Let's assume he did. But people become a replay of memes. Like movies can only make movie versions of objections to the Android meme.
Right.
Like a lot of TV shows are about like person of interest. They're all dealing with global surveillance. Many TV shows do this. And it's all a given that the politicians are corrupt, the law is compromised, the warriors are compromised. It's endless non-literate values. And the TV show can only show that. You know, like Homeland and all these other shows I'm watching. They're all similar in the critique they attempt. And it's a critique limited by the medium itself. So that the TV show cannot get into ideas, can't do manipulative satire of ideas like a book can, like Dave Eggers does.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the media, and I wrote about this, you know, 30 years ago in my memos of Prince Charles and that you're seeing the media talk about itself. And each medium is expressing its bias, and it's limited to that now. It's all it can be. And that's why McLuhan, you know, made this Broadway play where the media come out and describe their perspective on things. The media, different technologies were the characters. So all the businesses, all the media environments are really weak, and that just leaves people the tactile involvement and participation of endlessly responding to whatever emails or textings they're getting. You know, that's mm-hmm. where people live today. The tactile response to scanning what comes into their chip body. And mm-hmm. no medium can counter that, other than maybe ION. ION is maybe mm-hmm. a medium that can counter, in the many ways it offers, this ridiculous weakening of everything, including flesh, and leads to a great boredom culture, because nobody's getting sparked. And we claim we're sparking people, but it seems to be only a minority so far responding. Not mm-hmm. everybody.